Welcome to the FinTech Scaling Show. This podcast is sponsored by the Growth Platform Framework. B2B FinTech startups accelerate customer acquisition and set up business operations to scale systematically. When you're ready to grow, reach out to us at richard@ipractitioners.com. Now, over to the show with Richard Dosey, founder and host.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Today on the show, we have Halvor, CEO of Aprila Bank out in Norway. Hey, Halvor, how's it going today? Great to have you on the show.
Hey, Richard. It's going well. Thank you.
Cool. Let's kick off the show and maybe you can give our listeners a bit of a background about yourself.
So my name is Halvor Lambe. I'm a Norwegian mathematician by education. Did start and run a small software business in the late 90s and early 2000s called Risk Lab. Then I joined the consulting and was in McKinsey for 8 years, working typically with banks and technology companies around the world. And then I joined the continued sort of a corporate career, joined DNB, which is the incumbent bank in Norway as head of digitalization. And did that for 3 years. Then I got the opportunity to join Aprila Bank as the CEO last year. I joined 1st of August last year. Aprila Bank actually started back in 2017, but it's been an awesome journey to join the startup again and to be part of a real growth journey and working with scaling, which is, you know, even more fun than working with just with automation and digitalization and defense, which you typically do in large corporates.
Yeah, cool. Interesting background, interesting journey. I mean, maybe you can give us a bit of background into Aprila Bank and what you guys are doing and what problem you're looking to solve.
Yeah, absolutely. So the big problem that Aprila Bank is trying to solve is making it easier in general to start, run and grow businesses. This is one of the biggest issues with doing that today. And this is the same problem in all countries in Europe is access to capital. I mean, everybody knows about how difficult it is to get access to equity and fundraising, but it's just as difficult to actually get loans or get liquidity credit as a small business. As a matter of fact, only 10% of small businesses, if we define small businesses as 10 employees or less, which are at least 90% of all businesses, only 10% of those are able to get any sort of credit or loan in a bank. This is a major issue because small and medium-sized businesses are 99% of all businesses, and they also account for 85% of all new job creation in society. Now, when it's more important than ever to ensure jobs, to build new businesses that are more sustainable for the environment and so on, and to actually employ people, it's a pity that it is so difficult because a lot of great businesses don't start because promising entrepreneurs with great ideas decides to remain in their comfortable jobs in large corporates. You have a lot of profitable small businesses that go bankrupt because they have seasonal liquidity issues. And you have a lot of very good businesses that grow a lot slower than they could have if they had the proper access to capital. Instead, they have to live hand to mouth and grow organically, very organically, without even loans, which is a very slow way to grow for most businesses. That's our mission, to make it easier to start, run, and scale businesses. The creation story of Aprila Bank was started by two investment bankers, Per Christian Kjetil, and then they joined up with a product and technology guy and found an investor. And these two investment bankers, they had been working with raising capital for startup banks in Norway for many years. But the problem was that the only banks that came to startup were consumer lending banks. And they got increasingly frustrated by the fact that everything people wanted to do was start new consumer lending banks. There were so many of them in the market already. They felt that, you know, more consumer loan and even easier access to credit for consumers was probably not the right, you know, the best for society or for the customers. And they kept waiting till someone wanted to start a bank for small and medium-sized businesses. And when no one did, they basically decided to start Aprila Bank, and then they raised the capital, which they had the experience in doing, and Aprila Bank launched back in April 2018, hence the name Aprila.
Yeah, I mean, I think you guys have a great purpose in helping small businesses start running and grow. I mean, what locations are you operating in? Are you very focused in one location? Or are you in multiple sort of pan-European locations?
Right now, we're still only in Norway. Our scope and ambition is the whole of Europe, but we have to start somewhere. In the next year, we'll probably expand into our second country. We haven't yet decided whether that's Finland or Sweden. Then the rest of the Nordics within the next 2 to 3 years, and then expanding into sort of continental Europe, maybe also UK from 2023 and onwards. One reason why we believe it's a good thing to start out in Scandinavia is that the economy and society here is extremely digital. So for instance, everyone in Scandinavia has two-factor authentication for identification and logging in and so on. And everybody uses the same thing. It's got something called Bank ID, which makes it extremely easy to build the digital onboarding processes, and also public information both about individuals and businesses are available from the government through APIs. So it's easy to both build a fully digital business model, which obviously is what we're doing. We don't believe, we know that retail customers don't want to go to branches, and obviously business customers don't want to go to branches either. We've even taken that one step further. We don't even believe in digital branches per se. So we're not, at least currently, not very focused on developing our own apps or our own better, more fancy online bank. We instead focus on building great APIs and then having applications, for instance, accounting software and invoicing software or e-commerce applications integrate with our APIs in order to offer credit and payment products inside as an integrated part of their products and services.
Yeah, okay, cool. I mean, it sounds like you guys obviously have a roadmap to scaling. And you mentioned one factor there being the digital economy in sort of the Nordic countries as a factor that you're considering for market entry. What other factors do you guys consider as you approach other countries, other markets to get your product out there?
Other very important factors are business culture in general, especially topics related to anti-money laundering and tax evasion and stuff like that in particular, because those are, I mean, if you take business culture first, you know, what's the culture of actually paying back your loans if you have a loan? What's the culture in terms of paying bills on due dates and so on? These are important factors to consider, and varies from country to country in Europe. And that's massive implication for pricing and risk and things that are very important from a financial services point of view and a lending point of view, obviously. And then the topic around anti-money laundering and financial crime is also a very tough requirement from the regulators, and that we have to prove that we have very robust systems in place for identifying and avoiding all kinds of involvement in any sort of shady businesses or operations. And obviously that is easier to do in economies that are more digital than, for instance, more cash-based economies. And there are also differences between the European countries. Some countries have a larger black economy than other countries, without naming any countries.
Cool. I mean, yeah, I mean, the regulatory burden, especially in that sort of AML space, is a key talking topic across not just Europe, across the world right now. As you move forward and you grow and you scale, what methods and tactics are you using to make certain that you balance the growth of your core business with other initiatives such as, you know, geographic expansion or new products, etc.?
Maybe take one step back. As a company, what we believed would be the most difficult thing was to, from scratch, build a trusted brand in banking and start driving traffic to our own website, basically. So we decided not to start out with that. Instead, we approached the biggest accounting system provider in Europe, actually, called Visma, which also is the biggest accounting software provider in the Nordics and in Norway. Got them excited about the idea to offer financial products inside their accounting systems. And the thinking was that it would be, for instance, one of their systems already had 40,000 business users. And our first product was an API for prepayment of invoices. So that inside the system, once you had created an invoice, instead of sending it out as you know you would normally do and wait 3 to 8 weeks to get paid, our API would calculate the value of that invoice and say, hey, you can actually get 97% of the face value of that invoice as cash right now to your account. Do you want to do that or do you want to send it out as normal? As I said, they got excited about the idea and they implemented that integration so that all of the users of this particular invoicing system called TripleTex, it's a Visma system, got the opportunity to basically get their invoices prepaid. And that was a great way of onboarding and attracting the first 500-600 customers. The issue, and then we did the same thing basically with two other major accounting software providers in Norway. The issue we experienced was that it was only a small fraction, approximately 2 to 3% of the users of these software systems that were willing to take the leap to activate a financial service inside the accounting software, and especially a financial service that they had never heard about before and from a brand name, Aprila, that they also didn't recognize. The vast majority, you know, decided they were curious and read information about it, but they never took the step to actually activate the service. And so basically, we very quickly got the sort of early adopters, but it was difficult to get the early majority of the users. So that's when we realized that even though this was a good sort of initial strategy to acquire our first set of pilot customers, we actually also needed to do the hard work of building our own brand and building our own website and making it possible for businesses and users out there to see that we were also a trusted standalone bank that they could use, and also make it accessible for businesses that weren't using any of the software that had integrated with us already. So that's where we are now on the scaling journey. It's more focused on, or an additional focus. These accounting systems are still an important distribution channel for us, but we're supplementing it with basically classical digital brand building, advertising, digital sales, our own landing pages, products like Credit Line that you can get and that works irrespective of whether you have an accounting system that supports us or not.
Interesting journey. I mean, you touched on one thing that I'd like to maybe get your thoughts on, which is partnerships. I mean, obviously, these accounting software providers are in some way, shape or form partners of yours because they're distributing your IP out to their wider community. So how have you or how would you go about partnering while making certain that you are selecting the right, you know, software providers or resellers? What's the method that you guys went through?
So we just, you know, started with the biggest providers, and Visma is by far the biggest, and we're lucky to get them excited about the idea. So I think that was the right strategy, to start with the biggest potential partners and then move down the list from there, basically. And if you get no from the biggest one, you know, try the second biggest. If you get no there, try the third biggest, and so on. What is obviously extremely important and very crucial to get these sort of partnerships to work is to make sure that you have a really good value proposition for the partner, and you're able to very convincingly demonstrate that together you can deliver a value proposition that neither of you can do alone. And in our case, We had the banking license, we had the capital to lend, we had all the necessary licenses and know-how to do the risk assessment and the credit scoring and the license to do payments and all of that. So that was easy for us to explain. And that, I guess, is one of the challenges in actually establishing these partnerships, especially with players that are much larger than yourself. Because at this point, Aprila was a startup consisting of 5 people and Visma was a 10,000 people organization. The other obvious challenge is actually getting access to the relevant decision makers in these large organizations at all. And in that case, I think we, Aprila, were lucky because there were some early investors in the advisory board who happened to be close friends with the CEO of Visma at the time, who basically opened the doors and also helped convince the CEO that this was the right thing to do. So having those sort of door openers is crucial. You will never get a meeting with the CEO of a large company unless you have someone who can open the door for you.
Yeah, and you've mentioned a number of times today already that you guys have gone down the path of testing channels and different distribution channels. Were you pretty analytical in looking at metrics coming out of those channels? And if so, what exactly were you looking at to maybe determine a winning cycle, for want of a better word?
In our case, the metrics were how many actually looked at the ads and the product descriptions that accounting software put forward to their users, and then how many clicked on it or started the application process or the activation process, and how many completed the activation process. And then obviously for the ones who completed, how many of those did we eventually approve as customers of us and provide them the service to get prepaid invoices, for instance. So those were the main metrics. I think one interesting finding that came out of that was that, as I mentioned earlier, a lot of people were willing to spend significant amount of time, more than 2 minutes, reading about, what does it mean to get the prepaid your invoice? How does it work? How much does it cost, etc.? But then only a small fraction of those, less than 10%, actually took the next step to activate, to start the application process. And one insight that we learned from that was that these accounting software providers, they were used to selling, obviously, accounting software, and they had and marketing and explaining accounting software, but they had no prior experience in actually selling real financial services involving banking and money and things like that. So that was one of the reasons why we realized that, we cannot, even though these companies are great at the industry that they're in and selling their own products, they needed a lot more support from our side in explaining the product properly in the right context with the right selling points, and also with helping building a trusted brand from our side that potential customers could recognize. So that's another reason. And now over the last year, especially last few months, have focused on building up our own marketing and sales capability, basically our customer acquisition capabilities.
Yeah, that makes clear sense. And then, as part of scaling, we all know we need to build our team and our capabilities within our wider organization. So on that note, how have you made your team aware of your scale plan and where you guys are going?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So our sort of long-term goal, which everyone in the company is aware of, is that we want to contribute to creating or preserving 1 million jobs by this decade, so during the next 10 years. And everyone is also familiar with the geographical expansion plan. Then in addition to that, we have a sort of a little bit more detailed 4-year financial plan, which also has targets on number of customers and revenue per customer and so on. I don't think most people in the organization are very aware of that plan, even though we have presented it several times, but it's not, it's a little bit complex and it's not that relevant to for everybody to do a lot of thinking about. But what we do spend a lot of time on is quarterly objectives and key results, where towards the end of every quarter, we try to engage the whole organization, the whole team. We're 30 people, but it's five different departments, five different teams. So we challenge each of those five teams to come up with their suggestion or proposal for what should be Aprila's overall main objectives and key results for the coming quarter. We of course give them the input of, you know, the goal. Here's our high level strategic goals for this year, and here's how we're doing on these metrics, and here are the opportunities we know about. And then we invite each department to come up with their suggestion for Aprila's top level objectives and key results. Maximum three objectives and maximum five key results for each objective. And then sometimes we do a kind of a voting process to prioritize those. Other times we just refine and consolidate it in the management team. And then once we have set those objectives and key results for a quarter, we go through them every week in the weekly staff meeting, which we do as a video meeting, which actually works much better than physical meetings when you're 30 people, where we go through each key result and where the person who is owning the key results gives a detailed update for what the status is, what progress that has been made, challenges he or she is facing, etc. I feel that for us, that's a powerful way to keep everyone on the same page, reminding everyone what are our top priorities right now and getting some sort of stability and focus in what otherwise would have been a more chaotic environment.
Yeah, well, I mean, one key word springs to mind there. I mean, there's a lot of great stuff there, but one key word is empowerment. It seems like you empower your teams to be part of the strategy and decision-making, which is great.
I think that might be a little bit of a Scandinavian thing. We are very egalitarian countries, and people expect, employees expect to be involved in these kind of decisions and trade-offs. And I think that makes all the sense in the world, because if we can get 30 brains to work on that, on the problem of how to solve our biggest, you know, strategic problems or challenges, what should our priorities be, what are the most important things for us as a company to achieve, if we're able to do that in an effective way, obviously 30 brains combined in a good way works more effective than our five brains working on the same problem. And the additional benefit is that when everyone has contributed and feel that they have been heard, they have more ownership, and they have a better understanding of what we're doing and why we're trying to do it than they would have if, you know, this was something that we just informed them. Here are the targets, and here's what you need to do. Please deliver. And so I'm a great believer in trying to get, obviously, in an effective and planned and structured way, but really getting as much involvement and ownership from the full team as you possibly can.
Yeah, it makes complete sense. And as you move forward in your new growth and your scale journey, what difficult questions or challenges are you asking yourself, and factors are you considering to continue that growth trajectory?
There is always the question about market size, obviously, and who are our most relevant and high probability customers and customer segments. That's a recurring question. And then another question that's very important for us that we continuously work on is, what does it take to make the decision to actually become a customer? And the reason why that question is particularly interesting for us is that if you look at small businesses, they typically don't use banks today. And there's an obvious reason for that. Banks don't, in general, don't serve small businesses, except with, you know, the standard stuff like current accounts and maybe a debit card and a shitty online bank solution and payments. Everybody has that, but it doesn't work very well. And when small businesses historically have asked for loans or credit cards from their bank, they have been rejected. So there is a big distrust among small businesses in banks in general, sort of a little bit of loss of faith. And also, since there is a very strong assumption that, you know, there's no point going to the bank to get the loan, the mindset among most businesses is that you have to be able to survive on your own. You can't rely on lending. You have to always have enough cash in your account and find a good way, effective way to live hand to mouth. So it actually is a big, it requires a little bit of education and mindset shift to actually get the small businesses on board to understanding that credit is available and it is actually a very useful tool for running and growing your business. And this question of what is the most effective way of converting non-consumers to businesses that have not used lending before to actually start using that tool, that's another big problem. And then obviously, how do we reach these potential customers? How do we communicate with them? Basically, we have two channels that we're using in our marketing efforts. It's AdWords and Google Ads, and then what we call programmatic marketing, which is both social media ads, primarily Facebook, but also sort of industry-specific digital media. And basically, how can you get the message out to as many potential prospects as possible? What's the cost per click on those ads? How can you optimize the conversion rate from click to actually completing an application? So these are the main questions.
Some interesting things for you guys to discover and answer over the next little while. And I mean, I guess part and parcel of that is learning, not just learning the market, but not or your consumers, but also how to scale, how to build teams. So with that being said, a lot of entrepreneurs turn to what other people have done in the past. And I guess what I'd like to ask you is, are you doing the same? Are you reading books? And if so, what books or lessons previously learned from others are you looking at right now?
Obviously, we're reading books. We even have a book club in Aprila. And I think that's my biggest learning from my first experience as a founder and CEO of a software company or a startup company, because in the 90s, because then we didn't try to learn from other people's experiences at all. We just tried to do our own thing and do what we thought made sense, and basically learning from the hard knocks of reality, which was not and definitely not as efficient as really trying to learn from others and leverage experiences and best practices from what other both successful and unsuccessful startup and scale-ups have done previously. So I think we've read all the books, you know, the classicals, Lean Startup, Zero to One, The Hard Thing About Hard Things. Spotify has, you know, shared some interesting learnings from their both scale-up journey in general, but also how they have organized product development, for instance. There's lots of great business books. Like, for instance, I'll get back to the other titles when I remember them. But yes, yeah. We read a lot of books. The answer is yes, basically.
Yeah, great. I mean, it's always a good source of knowledge. And listen, before we wrap up the show today, how can people find and connect with you guys?
Yeah, so I guess probably the best way is on LinkedIn. So just search up Aprila Bank and connect with us. We try in general to accept those kind of connections and take dialogues from there. So LinkedIn is the best way.
Oh, brilliant. Listen, thanks so much for giving us a glimpse into your world today. It's been fascinating to, you know, understand a bit about your background and also the journey that you guys are on. It's been, yeah, really good having you on the show.
Thank you, Richard. It's been a pleasure.
Great. Cheers. Speak soon.